Translation. Krishna's face is decorated with ornaments, such as earrings resembling sharks. His ears are beautiful, his cheeks brilliant, and his smiling attractive to everyone. Whosoever sees Krishna sees a festival. His face and body are fully satisfying for everyone to see, but the devotees are angry at the Creator for the disturbance caused by the momentary blinking of their eyes. Report by Srila Prabhupada. As stated by the Lord Himself in Bhagavad Gita 7.3, Manushyanam sahasreshu kaschidyatati siddhaye yatatang apisyat siddhanang kaschinmam betitatpataha. Out of many thousands among men, one may endeavor for perfection. And of those who have achieved perfection, hardly one knows me in truth. Unless one is qualified to understand Krishna, one cannot appreciate the presence of Krishna on earth. Among the Bhojas, Vrishnis, Andakas, Pandavas, and many other kings intimately related with Krishna, the intimate relationship between Krishna and the inhabitants of Vrindavan is especially to be noted. That relationship is described in this verse, by the words Nityotsavam Naktatripur Drishibik Pibantyu. The inhabitants of Vrindavan, especially such as the cowherd boys, the cows, the calves, the gopis, and Krishna's father and mother, were never fully satisfied, although they saw Krishna's beautiful features constantly. Seeing Krishna described here as Nitya Utsava, a daily festival. The inhabitants of Vrindavan saw Krishna almost every moment, but when Krishna left the village for the pasturing grounds, where he tended the cows and calves, the gopis were very much afflicted because they saw Krishna walking on the sand and thought that Krishna's lotus feet, which they dared not place on their breasts because they thought their breasts were not soft enough, were being pierced by broken chips of stone. They thought that his feet were being pierced by broken chips of stone. But even thinking of this, the gopis were affected and they cried at home. These gopis, who were therefore the exalted friends of Krishna, saw Krishna constantly. But because their eyelids disturbed their vision of Krishna, the gopis condemned the Creator, Lord Brahma. Therefore, the beauty of Krishna, especially the beauty of his face, is described here. At the end of the ninth canto, in the 24th chapter, we find a hint of Krishna's beauty. Now we are proceeding to the 10th canto, which is considered Krishna's head. The entire Srimad Bhagavat Purana is the embodiment of Krishna's form, and the 10th canto is his face. This verse gives a hint of how beautiful his face is. Krishna's smiling face, with his cheeks, his lips, the ornaments in his ears, his chewing of betel nuts, all this was minutely observed by the gopis, who thus enjoyed transcendental bliss, so much so that they were never fully satisfied seeing Krishna's face, but instead condemned the Creator for the body, for making eyelids that obstructed their vision. The beauty of Krishna's face was therefore much more appreciated by the gopis than by his friends, the cowherd boys, or even by Yashoda Mata, who was also interested in decorating the face of Krishna. Yashyana nang makara kundala charukarna prajat kapola subagamsa vilasa hasam nityotsavam natatripur drishibik pibantyo naryo narascha mudita kapitana mescha. Krishna's face is decorated with ornaments such as earrings resembling sharks. His ears are beautiful, his cheeks brilliant, and his smiling attractive to everyone. Whoever sees Lord Krishna sees a festival. His face and body are fully satisfying for everyone to see. But the devotees are angry at the Creator for the disturbance caused by the momentary blinking of their eyes. Well, when I got up this morning and looked in the mirror, I didn't see a face like this. It was looking a bit bleary-eyed. And after I got a bit of toothpaste foam around my mouth, I looked a real mess. But still, we tried to imitate the Lord in various ways. But we cannot compare. Our physical features cannot compare to the beauty of the Lord, which in our present condition state we may not have immediate access to. In fact, in our condition state we don't have. We only have descriptions, but they're wonderful poetical descriptions. But it isn't simply analogy. This isn't the process of zoomorphism. There's many in the Western world scholars who can contend that the descriptions of Godhead, which notably are lacking in the Abrahamic religions, no descriptions of God. When the Lord is described in the Vedic scriptures, particularly here in the Srimad Bhagavatam, it's dismissed as zoomorphism, which means taking the various aspects of material nature and combining them together to make some appealing creation. Or take a peacock feather from here and take a color blue and compare all these different comparisons. But of course this is not actually the case. As it's hinted at even in the Bible, it says God made man in his own image. So the Lord has form. The Lord has his impersonal feature, his localized feature as Paramatma, and his supreme feature as Bhagavan. And then when the devotee realizes the eternal Bhagavan feature of the Lord, depending on the relationship, the Lord is more and more revealed to him. And also the devotee appreciates more the different features of the Lord. As Srila Prabhupada mentioned right at the end of his purport, he says particularly the gopis are scrutinizing the face of Krishna. And even Mother Yashoda, she's decorating the face of Krishna, but she's not got the same the same intensity of appreciation, and that comes with Madhurya Ras. So we're not going to enter into discussing these very intimate rasas. They're beyond our immediate purview. As Srila Prabhupada points out in various places throughout his purports, and indeed the Vaishnava Acharyas, and one shouldn't try to see the face of the Lord. Shouldn't try to see. In fact, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said we shouldn't even try to see Krishna. But to speak of his face, don't even try to see it. But act in such a way that he wants to see you. Act in such a way he wants to see you. We could make a comparison. Sometimes the atheists, they say, well, why can't I see God? They don't even believe in God. They say, well, why can't I see him? They can't even see themselves. Don't even acknowledge what to speak of, perceive the soul, what to speak of Godhead. So they say, I want to see God. And our devotee who was here this morning, Ram Narsingha, he has a website. It's an open forum for discussing theism. And he has many atheists coming to his forum. And he very politely and very succinctly defeats the various atheists with his very logical arguments. And they often comment, saying, well, I've never been to any of these theistic forums where it's so succinct and polite. There's no angry words, there's no fanatical raging and fundamentalist Bible bashing, they say. or Bhagavatam bashing. Who wants to bash the Bhagavatam? But very nice, very well appreciated, even though they're atheists. Just like sometimes on Harinam on Saturday nights, people come up to us and they say, what you're doing is wonderful. He said, I don't believe in God. I don't believe any of this stuff. But, it's such a lovely... And they're moved by it. The atheists are moved by the chanting of the Holy Name. Chanting the Holy Name has massive effects. Some may see the, the rah, rah, rah. But actually, no, the Holy Name is there. Affecting everyone. Atheists and theists alike. Sometimes we see the theists. No, I'm a Christian. They're not moved. No, I'm a Hindu. I know this. And yet the atheists come up saying, I'm so touched. Well, this is the potency of the Holy Name. It's beyond religion. People sometimes come up, what religion is this? Is this Hinduism? I say, no. It's beyond religion. This is the science of the soul. The science of the soul's relationship with the Supreme. Totally different dimension. But one has to go beyond religion. In that sense, Bhagavatam, it's beyond religion. Srila Prabhupada used to describe many religious processes as cheating religion, insofar as it's cheating because we come to God in a cheating mentality. We go to the temple, the mosque, the synagogue, the church, whatever, and we say our prayers, or we chant our hymns, or chant our mantras. I've been a good, so here's my shopping list. What's in it for me? We offer out. Then we have our shopping list for God. Just like many come before the deities. They're pious to come before the deities. And they're praying, let my son pass his exams. Can we have a new car? Whatever. So we're coming to God with our wants. But we don't come to the Lord asking, how can I serve you? How can I serve you? We actually come and say, please serve me. This is cheating. Cheating religion. But the Bhagavatam is beyond that. It's beyond this cheating mentality. Because ultimately we're only cheating ourselves. We're cheating ourselves. We come to Lord with a cheating mentality. It's only me I'm cheating. You can't cheat Krishna. How can you cheat God? He reciprocates. You cheat God, he'll cheat you. But he only reciprocates. If you don't want God, he's hidden. If you want to know about him, he'll make arrangements so you can find out. Just like all of us came to the devote to Krishna, to the Krishna consciousness mission, one way or another, somehow or other. Maybe not directly, maybe very indirectly. Some of us weren't even perhaps interested in God consciousness, but Krishna tricks us. He remembers something we did past life. He sees a bit of sincerity. Yeah, prasadam, holy name, a book, association of devotee, whatever, different stories. We all got a different story how we initially became in contact with Srila Prabhupada's mission, the mission of Lord Chaitanya. So Krishna reciprocates. Krishna reciprocates. So, just as the atheist demanding to see God, even though he doesn't believe him, well, I believe when I see him. Sometimes this is it's compared to demanding to see the Queen. You want to see the Queen? How can you go and... You can see her on television, maybe, or in the newspaper picture. You might even see her on a big parade on her birthday, the trooping of the colour, all the... You see on the balcony, but to actually have to sit down and have a one-to-one with the Queen. You think you can go and see the Queen? But what if you act in such a way that the Queen wants to see you? You do some noble works. You do some, of course, in the mundane estimation, and she'll even give you a medal or give you a knighthood. Anyone here been knighted recently? So. One can act in such a way that the Queen or some well-placed person wants to see you, and there's no stopping them. So it's the same with Krishna. Act in such a way that Krishna wants to see us. It's simple. But one has to be patient. It isn't like that. Well, I've been chanting Hare Krishna for 10 years now. Why wasn't Krishna come to see me? In fact, when we come to have darshan actually isn't that you come to see Krishna, it's that you present yourself before the Lord. Actually, no, you come and have darshan. I have darshan. No, you come, here I am, Lord. Here I am. So lovely to see you. Whatever. Right. that yes, we can see Krishna's face in the form of the deity. We can see the Lord's face. But in the meditational process, it's recommended that one meditate on the lotus feet of the Lord. And gradually, just like the Bhagavatam, the different cantos of the Bhagavatam correspond with the different bodily features of the Lord. And here we are at the end of the ninth canto, and we're being given a little glimpse. The tenth canto is known as the summum bonum. It features the detailed descriptions of the Lord and his intimate pastimes. All of his pastimes are intimate. Krishna's pastimes with his cows is intimate. It's all intimate. Krishna's conversation with Arjuna is intimate. Very confidential. How many people can even, how many cultures have such wonderful revelation of the Lord's personal pastime to his devotees? It isn't. Only in the Vedic culture. And even in the Vedic cultures, Krishna says that among thousands among men who endeavor for perfection, hardly one knows me in truth. Even those who are transcendentalists. So we are very fortunate. We have the words of Lord Sri Krishna, Shukadeva Goswami, and we have the purports of Srila Prabhupada, which give us access to these wonderful, this wonderful Bhagavatam. Without the input of the pure devotee, without the guidance, we're in a foreign land. Just like you go to India. I remember, I've not been to India many times actually. Last time was 1996. And one time I was in Connaught Circus area. And this very pleasant chap comes bouncing up. He said, I'll show you around. No charge. I'll show you around. What do you want to see? What do you want? He kind of took me by surprise. And I said, okay, yeah, you show me around. So he showed me places I wouldn't necessarily have shown. Wouldn't have seen. No. He took me to this place. Do you want to see this? You want to see this? No, no. Okay, well, what do you want to see? Because I didn't. He said, no charge. Today's special day, no charge. Because I was a bit green. I never thought, well, the charge is, he goes around the day after or the next week and goes around to all the people whose shops he went to. Hey, I want my cut now. No? He wants his cut. So when these guides takes you around the various bazaars and shops, the shops put the prices up because they know they've got to pay this guy who showed you around. Or better example, when we go on Parakram in Mayapur or Vrindavan, Braj Parakram, it's very nice to have the guidance, a tour guide, transcendental tour of the place. This is where such and such a place happened. Can we see it? No. We don't see the pastime happening. To us it looks like a field. But actually it's a place of most exalted pastimes. Whether it's in Krishna Lila or Lord Chaitanya's pastimes. Or perhaps even an incarnation of the Lord appears. Some places, Lord Nrisimhadeva rested in the Mayapur Dham. But we can't see it. So we're given the guidance by the devotee, who perhaps can't see it himself. But he's in the parampara system. He's heard from those who've heard from those who've heard from those who've actually directly perceived it. So as in the case of Srila Prabhupada's purports, we may not directly perceive, but we can directly access Prabhupada's vision, and his guidelines, his guidance is there to help us see these verses from the perspective of pure devotion. Otherwise we can take them in a mundane way or to completely misunderstand them. Completely misunderstand. So when this verse came up, when I was asked to give this class, I was I started going through the Vani Veda base, looking through this expression, face of the Lord. Where are the references to the face of the Lord? So I had a few notes here. I won't read them all. But first of all, I'd just like to at the end, towards the end of this purport, Srila Prabhupada is explaining how the tenth canto is compared to the face of the Lord. This verse gives a hint of how beautiful His face is. Krishna's smiling face with His cheeks, His lips, the ornaments in His ears, His chewing of betel nuts, all this was minutely observed by the gopis. It's the previous sentence. Prabhupada says, now we are proceeding to the 10th canto, which is considered Krishna's head. Krishna's head. So, what are the different parts of the canto? What are the different parts of the Bhagavatam? How do the different cantos relate to Krishna's form? So, you see, Radha Gokula Nanda Ki Jai. So Krishna is revealing His beautiful form here. So the first two cantos, represent the Lord's lotus feet. They represent the Lord's lotus feet, cantos 1 and 2. Now if you move up our meditation, meditate on the thighs of the Lord. That's the area of His legs, above His knee. The Lord's thighs, canto 3 and canto 4. And we move up further. Meditate on the Lord's waist. That's the fifth canto. And moving up, meditate on His chest. That's the sixth canto. The seventh and eighth canto are His two strong arms. Seventh and eighth. The arms of the Lord. And now meditate on the Lord's neck, if you can see it. And that is the ninth canto. The tenth canto is Lord Krishna's smiling face. Now above, well, part of His face is His forehead, the Lord's forehead. That's the 11th canto. And the crown on His head, that is the 12th canto. So the Bhagavatam takes us progressively, beginning at meditating on the lotus feet of the Lord. So one shouldn't jump to the face. One shouldn't jump to the face. Definitely. In fact, even in mundane society, in previous times, if a servant came before the master, they wouldn't look directly in the face of the master. They'd look down. Look at the feet. Even household servants would come before the master of the house. They wouldn't look at the master in the face. Considered impudent. Impudence. They'd say, sir or madam. And these days you go into a shop. Are you right over there? Not how can I serve you? Are you right? It gets me, it annoys me actually. But that's it. And then everyone's on first names. There's no respect. Because there's no self-respect. There's no respect for the self, therefore there's no respect for others. Or I think by minimizing others I will boost myself. It's arrogance. It's a symptom of the age. Hypocrisy, arrogance, no humility. So this is impudence to look in someone's face. One doesn't know one's place. I remember early days in the 70s, one of our first sannyasis, Ribat Nandan Swami. We'd never seen a sannyasi before, apart from Srila Prabhupada, and he came over from the States. And when he gave class, he'd always look at the floor. Always look at the floor. He was a very powerful preacher. He wasn't shy. If someone asked a question, he'd answer it. In fact, there was something unnerving about him not looking directly at, you know? So ask a question, sometimes he'd be challenged. And then he might, but then when he looked at you, he was blazing. And you thought, oh, maybe best is just as well, you don't look at me. So the eyes are the expression. We say the eye is the window of the soul. The eyes are the window of the soul. So our expression, our intention comes through our eyes. Of course, it's not the eye itself, it's the eyelids and the face around that. So much is expressed through the face. So sometimes the Lord expresses His happiness in a smiling face. Beautiful smiling face. There was a verse in the Bhagavatam many years ago which caught my eye. And it's about the face of the Lord. It's in the first canto. The translation is, this is first canto, first chapter, verse 26. The Lord's chest is the abode of the goddess of fortune. His mood-like face is the drinking vessel for eyes which hanker after all that is beautiful. His arms are the resting places for the administrative demigods, and his lotus feet are the refuge of pure devotees who never talk or sing of any subject except his lordship. So not only is this very poetical, it's describing the nature of the highest reality, the Lord's personal feature. And there in the purport, there's a very nice paragraph from Srila Prabhupada. In the purport, Prabhupada speaking about the goddesses of fortune, and for one who sees the form of the Lord, he automatically sees all Krishna's associates as well. But this is the bit that caught my eye. Prabhupada says, and those who are artists, overtaken by the beautiful creation, should better see to the beautiful face of the Lord for complete satisfaction. The face of the Lord is the embodiment of beauty. What they call beautiful nature is but his smile, and what they call the sweet songs of the birds are but specimens of the whispering voice of the Lord. So this is a way of appreciating the Lord through his Bharat Rupa, in other words, through the material energy. We hear the birds singing, it's Prabhupada saying, it's like it's a specimen of the whispering voice of the Lord. And when we see the beauty of nature, this is but the smile on the face. It's an indication. And further on in the purport, Prabhupada says, the essence of everything is the Supreme Lord. He's called Saram, Saram. Of those who sing and talk about him, and those who sing and talk about him are called Sarangas, or the pure devotees. Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote a book called Sharanagati, same root. The pure devotees are always hankering after the lotus feet of the Lord. The lotus has a kind of honey which is transcendentally relished by his devotees. The devotees are like the bees who are always after the honey. Srila Rupa Goswami, the great devotee acharya of the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya, has sung a song about this lotus honey, comparing himself to a bee. O my Lord Krishna, he says, I beg to offer my prayers unto you. My mind is like the bee, and he's after some honey. Kindly therefore give my bee mind a place at your lotus feet, which are the resources for all transcendental honey. I know that even big demigods like Brahma do not see the rays of the nails of your lotus feet, even though they are engaged in deep meditation for years together. Still, O infallible one, my ambition is such, for you are very merciful to your surrendered devotees. O Madhava, I know also that I have no genuine devotion for the service of your lotus feet, but because your lordship is inconceivably powerful, you can do what is impossible to be done. Your lotus feet can deride even the nectar of the heavenly kingdom, and therefore I am very much attracted to them. O Supreme Eternal, please, therefore, let my mind be fixed at your lotus feet, so that eternally I may be able to relish the taste of your transcendental service. And Prabhupada says in the next paragraph, he says, the devotees are satisfied with being placed at the lotus feet of the Lord and have no ambition to see his all-beautiful face or aspire for the protection of the strong arms of the Lord. They are humble by nature, and the Lord is always leaning towards such humble devotees. So again, Prabhupada says we shouldn't try to see the Lord's face. Yes, we can here see his face in the temple, in his Archavigraha, in his Murti. And the pujaris have the great good fortune of decorating the Lord's body and his face every morning. wonderful meditation. So how is it that if it's recommended by the pure devotees not to strive to see the face of the Lord, the most exalted devotees like Mother Yashoda and the cowherd boys and the gopis are actually seeing the Lord face to face? Their love is so overwhelming, their sense of appropriate behavior has long been consumed in their intense love. Their love for Krishna is so intense, there any sorts of formality has long since disappeared. But to imitate that is very dangerous. Just like someone who has association of a big person, whether he's a managing director or the queen or etc., etc. Immediate family members, they can, they say, shoot the breeze. They can be familiar. And perhaps even in a moment of confidentiality, even some of the queen's maidservants and ladies-in-waiting and various persons of the household may have a little familiar exchange. But it's always on the terms of the queen. It's always on the terms of the managing director. They can't be presumptuous. If you're presumptuous, you find yourself, well, you might be out in your ear. So in a similar way, it's Krishna's revealing himself according to the love of the devotee. It's up to Krishna. Again, we shouldn't try to see Krishna. We should act in such a way Krishna wants to see us. And the, how much he reveals himself to us is entirely up to Krishna. It's reciprocal with our own unique loving relationship with the Lord. It's reciprocal. It's no good aspiring for something which I'm not qualified for. We're hardly qualified even to chant the holy name. We're not. If we were qualified to chant the holy name, we'd be chanting Hare Krishna and fainting in ecstasy. We would be in ecstasy. We'd have no, it'd be, we couldn't stop for a moment. We'd be like Haridas Thakur. Chanting. Sleeping 2 or 3 hours a day just for the body and then chant some more. Well, speaking for myself, I don't have that taste. So when we actually are qualified to chant the holy name, then we're actually getting somewhere. We're actually receiving the mercy of the Lord. But still, by the grace of the pure devotees, and by Krishna's grace, he comes with the book Bhagavat. There's the Lord himself, Bhagavat. There's the person Bhagavat, who's the embodiment of the Lord's pure devotee. He's the embodiment of pure devotion. And then there's the book Bhagavat. So somehow or other we have this wonderful facility here at Bhaktivedanta Maya and many temples around the world. So, time flies. So I'll just finish with a quote here. This is from second canto, Lord in the Heart. I know we're going back a few, we're in the ninth canto here. And just a quote here from the second canto. Anyone here remember when the second canto was the basis of class here at the manor? How many years ago was that? Look at it, 15, 20, 25, 30 years ago. So the reading from the Bhagavatam in class has been progressive over the years. So some of us are dropping in here in the ninth canto. Have we looked at the second canto? No. And within a few days, unless the temple has other policy, we'll be entering into the tenth canto. Not having studied the first, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth for some of our new devotees. So it behooves us to read the Bhagavatam in our spare time, beginning at the first, to catch up, as it were. Otherwise, we can fall of in the trap of familiarity. Yet, by Srila Prabhupada's grace, every purport, Srila Prabhupada is pulling us up to appreciate what it is that we're reading. Every one of Prabhupada's purports, you could take, practically speaking, I could be Krishna conscious, you could be Krishna conscious, simply by studying and applying one purport of Srila Prabhupada. Over and over again, Prabhupada is saying the same thing from a slightly different way. He's summarizing everything. Everything is there to be Krishna conscious. We think, oh, well, there's got to be something more. We read the 10th canto, well, that's nice. Let me have some more intimate pastimes, something deeper, deeper. Nothing deeper. No, this is the deepest. But we who are shallow. It's me who are shallow. I'm about as deep as a coat of paint. But the potential is there, but it's there with love. When we awaken our love, and love comes not through sentiment, it's love, it's devotional service. Service, 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 service. In fact, love is 90% duty, 10% feeling. 90% duty. Yes, I love you. Oh, you're hungry? No, no. But I love you. Yeah. But I'm hungry. No, no, no. I love you. You can't eat love. Love is a doing. It's not a feeling, it's a doing. The feeling is peripheral. That's an effect. So, here in the temple, the Lord is served. Duty, 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 duty. He serves sumptuously. So much energy put into the serving the Lord in his vigraha form. So let's just read this little purport. This Prabhupada says, this is the translation. The process of meditation should begin from the lotus feet of the Lord and progress to his smiling face. The meditation should be concentrated upon the lotus feet, then the calves, then the thighs, and in this way higher and higher. The more the mind becomes fixed upon the different parts of the limbs, one after another, the more the intelligence becomes purified. Prabhupada's purport, he says, the process of meditation recommended in the Srimad Bhagavatam is not to fix one's attention on something impersonal or void. The meditation should concentrate on the person of the Supreme Godhead, either in his Bharat Rupa, that is the material universal form, the gigantic universal form, Prabhupada says, or his Sat Chitananda Vigraha, as described in the scriptures, his eternal form of knowledge and bliss. There are authorized descriptions of Vishnu forms, and there are authorized representations of his deities in the temples. Thus one can practice meditating upon the deity, concentrating his mind on the lotus feet of the Lord, and gradually rising higher and higher up to his smiling face. According to the Bhagavat school, the Lord's rasa dancing is the smiling face of the Lord. Since it is recommended in this verse that one should gradually progress from the lotus feet up to the smiling face, we shall not jump at once to understand the Lord's pastimes in the rasa dance. It is better to practice concentrating our attention by offering flowers and tulsi to the lotus feet of the Lord. In this way, we gradually become purified by the archana process, the deity worship process. We dress the Lord, bathe him, etc. And all these transcendental activities help us purify our existence. So, running out of time. That's it. So just to recap the verse. Krishna's face is decorated with ornaments such as earrings which resemble sharks. His ears are beautiful, his cheeks are brilliant, and his smiling attractive to everyone. Whosoever sees Lord Krishna sees a festival. His face and body are fully satisfying for everyone to see. But the devotees are angry at the Creator for the disturbance caused by the momentary blinking of their eyes. Any questions? Govinda.
Krishna. Technology, brilliant. You mentioned the various parts of the body of the Lord corresponding to the different cantos.
Yes.
Very interesting, and I've often tried to find the actual what the 11th and 12th canto are, but you've given the answer as the forehead and the crown. I just wondered where that comes from.
Where it came from? I'd like to say where it came from. I called Rupa Vilas, who's a great scholar, and because in the purport here, Prabhupada mentions the face in the 10th canto. What do the other cantos refer to? And he referred to a book by Burjan, who's quoting, but he didn't have the source of where Burjan got it from. But it's bona fide. I added to it. I just went through the different cantos and looked at the topic of each canto. So there's different parts of the Lord's bodily features, but there's also a topic for each canto. So I'll just go through those topics that correspond. And these are the topics as mentioned right at the beginning of the book. Ninth canto, it says liberation. It's liberation. So, okay, canto one, the Lord's lotus feet, creation. Canto two, the Lord's lotus feet, presumably his other foot, the cosmic manifestation. Canto three, the Lord's thighs, the status quo. That's the way things are in the material, the big picture. Canto four, again, the Lord's thigh, the creation of the fourth order. I assume that's because we have the primary creation, Mahavishnu, and Garbhadak Vishnu, from Lord Lord Brahma comes, and then Shirodakshaya, different stages of creation. So the creation of the fourth order, that will be the different planetary, the creations within the material sphere. The Lord's waist, the creative impetus. The Lord's chest, prescribed duties for mankind. The Lord's strong arms, first of all, Canto 7, the science of God, and Canto 8, withdrawal of the cosmic creation. That's the destruction of the whole material universe. Canto 9, his neck, that corresponds with liberation. Canto 10, his smiling face, is said to be the summum bonum. The summum bonum, that's the Lord's pastimes. That's the culmination of the whole Bhagavatam. It's the Lord's pastimes, culminating in the Rasa dance. Canto 11 is the Lord's forehead. That's the general history. A general history. And the crown, that's the top of the Lord, the crown. That's the age of deterioration. That's the description of the age of Kali. And that got me thinking, how is the age of deterioration, the Lord's crown? Well, you think about it. Which incarnation of the Lord appears in the age of deterioration? Lord Chaitanya. He's the crown of all Krishna's incarnations, the most merciful. More merciful than Krishna himself. So, the crown corresponds with the 12th canto, which describes the age of Kali and the what to expect, and also the solution to the whole thing, how we can get out and return to Krishna's lotus feet. Does that answer your query? Thank you. So thank you very much for your patience. Today's Ekadashi, and today we're fasting till noon, observing tomorrow's the appearance day of Lord Vamanadev. So fast today till midday in anticipation to invoke the blessings of Lord Vamanadev, the dwarf incarnation, tomorrow. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.